Monday, August 15th. I'd slept so well. Unhappily, Lyndon had not. He'd been awake at 2 and at 4 and was up at 6:30 and slipped quietly out while I sank gratefully back into the soft embrace of sleep. About 8:45, I was up and about my job, but the house was quiet. Those easiest of all house guests, the Crims, had taken the Josniers and departed way I did not know. Lyndon was out riding, and I spent about 2.5 very needed hours on the telephone with Bess, Henry Hall Wilson, Mike Manitos, Bill Moyers, working on the lists for the upcoming parties, the one on August 23rd for the young folks who are getting married, Hubert Humphrey's son and Bob McNamara's daughter, and Bill Wirtz's son, and the party on September the 7th for the Tchaikovsky winners, and the one on the 8th, the state dinner for Nhi Nguyen of Burma. Bess, that wonderfully efficient person, had sent me down the last two lists. We'd made good progress on the August 23rd list before leaving. But if well done, they take much thought and interweaving of those who would enjoy and be suitable for the occasion, would light the evening up, those who've helped us make our lives more useful or more fun, those whom the guests of honor particularly want to have, and always a checking to try to bring in new people to expand our field. So it was about 11:30 before I finished my calls. There was Lyndon in the door. Are you ready to go riding with me? And I was glad that I could give a quick yes with no amendments. We went through the Reagan and then on to the Segna property, and I could see Lyndon's mind working about buying one more place. I often laugh about him and land. Some men run racehorses. Some men collect jewels or paintings. And some men want more country, more land. We went down toward Jordan's to see where Dale had sent a couple of his boys, because it was too wet to work on the tractors, to cut the dead wood out of trees and to pull down the grapevines. It's a great temptation to see a tree clean and orderly and neat. You yearn to do it for all of them, and you could as well buy a handful of diamonds. We were back at the house by 1 and sat down for lunch with the Crims and the Johnsiers, who had had a wonderful morning, seeing the boyhood home in Johnson City, which was quite full, they said, and had already had 250 people by mid-morning, going on to the Morson's Ranch, where their daughter Daphne had agreed to hire out as a cowhand for the next week. Absolutely in love with life at Round Mountain. What a world apart from her life in New York City and Long Island and Switzerland. And little Mary Slater and Jake and Jenny and Juanita were with us. I had turned over to Juanita for the archive some of the silver that I especially treasured. Linda's and Lucy's baby forks and spoons with their names on them. A fish knife that had been liberated from Berchtesgaden by the first American soldiers to enter, among whom was Captain White. It had a very proud eagle and the initials A.H. on it. The silver dish that President Kennedy had given Lyndon and me when he spent the night at the ranch on November the 17th, 1960, a very graceful thing for him to do, come to the home of the Vice President. And when he'd found out it was our wedding anniversary, he had somehow managed, in a few hours' time, to get this silver dish engraved and had presented to us that evening. And also to Juanita I had given the 1908 Ladies' Home journals that had been in the rack down at the birthplace house and were getting more tattered every day. Yeah. I always feel sad when it's time for Lyndon to go back to Washington after a stay at the ranch. He told me that morning that he was not sleeping well night after night. It is the unrelieved pressure of Vietnam and the rising danger of inflation that makes his nights sleepless. He is a man of most remarkable discipline and sometime undiscipline. He drinks hardly at all anymore, and yet he has gained a good deal too much and cannot pass up second helpings and Mary's good desserts. I kissed him goodbye at 1:30. We went by helicopter into Austin. I'd spent a part of the morning dispatching Helen and James and Mr. Klein with 2 pickup loads of Lucy's wedding presents and a double bed that we were lending them, plus a kitchen table and some chairs, into the house on Heritage Way. And I arrived there myself a little past 2. I suppose it is some sort of a second chapter, a turning point, when you begin helping set up housekeeping for your daughter. And I'm arriving at it a little late. 53. I walked in and couldn't help but have a little sinking of the heart. This charming house was so small indeed, and so much needed to be done. The electricity not on, one chair, one table, two lamps, in the living room looking haphazard and lonely, and big boxes full of wedding gifts, at least labeled, covering the bedroom floor. Well, of such beginnings, a home is made. I left James and Helen and Mr. Klein at work and went to the beauty parlor, and when I returned, had gotten the wheels in motion to get the electricity turned on, and had made a little list of the things we could bring in at the next passing for Lynn Lucy. Chest of drawers, four lawn chairs, for the minute porch. I think of all this in contrast to silver embroidered caftans from the chief of state of Morocco, and Ayub Khan's emerald and diamond necklace, and it is rather hilarious. For days and days I've been waiting to be free to walk the river, and now was my chance. So by 4:30, I was back in the helicopter and bound for the Scharnhorst, and from there through Mr. Orange's ranch to the river. Okay. Mr. Orange had a most wonderful crop of wild Texas persimmons. The ripe ones were now black and soft, and I tasted one, a rather sweet, bland fruit. Not bad, but I didn't particularly like it. But the deer did. They were feasting in droves, some of the biggest bucks with the finest racks I ever saw. Lyndon could not have seen them without warning them. This time the walking was rather good. Most of the way the river bed was wide, with sandbars full of pebbles, and sometimes big boulders, and faults that ran slantways across the river, almost like stepping stones, so that once when we needed to cross, we could actually do it almost without getting wet. There was a song of little rapids in our ears most of the way. In the soft sand we came across croon tracks, and once Clarence, stepping over a rock, said look with excitement in his voice, and there was the perfect footprint of a man's shoe. I was as surprised as Robinson Crusoe was. I wondered who and why. Later on, rather repeatedly, we looked for footprints. Several times we found them. He was walking in the opposite direction from us, and I think with the size of the prints he must have been a boy. Clarence had looked at the river from a helicopter since I had been gone and told me there were roads out where a car could come to meet us, either about 1 mile down the river or about 3 miles, allowing for at least 100% error. I thought it couldn't be more than 6 miles. Yeah. We had elected to ask them to come to the second point of pickup and would expected to get there by dark. So I was amazed to hear when Clarence's pedometer registered a little less than 3 miles, Woody Taylor saying over the talking machine that he could see us. Their pickup was moving in from a high hill directly above us down toward the river. The point of contact was to be a deer camp, a grove of trees right at the foot of a great bluff that rose at the river's banks straight up to the sky. And so, amazingly, we were there at the same time, and it actually was 3 miles. The sky was full of great clouds, like powder puffs, changing to every shade of pink and rose and finally gray. I climbed rather gratefully into the Bronco with Ben Blossoman. We began the steep ascent of the hill. Those deer hunters that lease this place must really want to get away from life, their business, their wives, everything, because they really leave civilization behind at the top of this ridge. But I was enjoying the euphoria of being physically tired and having a cold beer and looking at the great drama of the sunset. I was back at the ranch by 7:30 and had just broiled steak and tomatoes in bed while I phoned invitations for tomorrow night's dinner and talked to Lucy, who gave me a delightful account of their first week's anniversary. Pat had taken her out to dinner, bought her an ounce of Joy perfume, eaten the food and drunk the water of the islands, and then on Sunday had promptly been quite ill. She miraculously had not. She had instead gone snorkeling and laying on the beach, and met up with 10 nuns who were in swimming. Somehow I never thought nuns went swimming. And she'd been enchanted with them, had taken them for a boat ride. The most extraordinary little girl. So it was early to bed, and a very satisfying day. The thought that makes me believe it can be a good transition from the Potomac back to the Pedernales.